Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Celeste Stein Show. I'm your host, Dr. Celeste Stein, and I'm so excited to have you guys in here today. Please don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to my channels on bbsradio.com and my YouTube channel, which can be found under the name Celeste Stein. We appreciate each and every one of you has taken the time out of your day to tune in to learn more about our channel, which focuses on news you can use, self-help topics, and entertainment. Today, we have a very special guest who's graciously decided to join me today. He's an award-winning PGA professional who has managed to grow his entrepreneurial platform in many ways. Virgil Herring is the first PGA professional to do a TEDx talk. He is also a golf analyst for News Channel 5 out of Nashville, my former stomping grounds, and he's a former Golf Channel Academy coach. You should also know that my guest today is the author of three best-selling books and is a longtime radio and podcast host. As a coach, he's taught two PGA Tour winners, two Korn Ferry Tour winners, six national champions, 13 state champions, and has helped over 200 junior golfers win over $11 million in scholarships. Quite impressive, Virgil. Welcome to the show.
Celeste, thank you for having me on your show. I'm honored to be here.
Well, I wanted to start by asking you, tell me, prior to all of these wonderful accolades, what actually drew you into the world of golf?
Well, I knew kind of early on in my life that I wasn't meant for an office. All I've ever done in my life is play sports. And golf really wasn't even on my radar screen until I tore my rotator cuff as a pitcher. And that's how I filled my summer. In 1989, I was 15 years old when I tore my rotator cuff the first time. I
Wow.
rehabbed it hard for 18 months so that I could pitch again because that was my life, was pitching. And I pitched seven games after that, tore my rotator cuff again. And, in 1991, they weren't really excited about doing surgery on a 17-year-old shoulder. Now they do it in 10 minutes and I'd be back pitching again. But at the end of the day, it led me to this great game that allows me to coach people to enjoy a life endeavor that can be used in business. And I feel like I'm the luckiest person in the world because I don't really do work. I get a chance to help people enjoy their life through sport.
Yeah, they say if you do something you love to do, you will never actually work a day in your life. And I believe that is so true. It's rare though that people actually live out their passion. So, hats off and kudos to you for actually, doing something you really enjoy doing because that's what makes the world go round. And I think, obviously through that, you add to so many people's lives in what you do. Now, I understand you spent some time in the military. Is there a correlation between what you learned in the military and golf?
I didn't have any military experience, but my sister was a Marine and my dad was in the Air Force during Vietnam. So I've been around military mindsets all my life. And to me, it all starts with discipline, right? The discipline to do what is required, the process to become great at something. And, maybe I was lucky because I got a chance to use a discipline in a sport that seemed way funner than war. But at the end of the day, what it takes to be great, the only thing that changes is like some of the words. What it takes to be a great Navy SEAL, a great Marine, a great CEO, the greatest golfer in the world, the greatest actor or actress in the world, it's a process that you need to follow and not anything else. It's really bizarre how everything is intertwined. I've read many autobiographies of the greatest and most successful people in a variety of endeavors. And what's fascinating is the words change slightly, but the process stays the same. And that's really how I choose to view my life going forward is I don't judge myself compared to anybody else other than me, and I'm just trying to be better than I was yesterday.
Yes, amen to that. I also mentioned that you were the first PGA professional to do a TEDx talk. I know that you spoke about your drive, to helping others. What is the most important message that you like to leave people with when it comes to actually helping them to achieve their goals?
Well, that's It's interesting, right? So you have a variety of factors that interfere with people's greatness. One of them is just getting off the couch, taking action. I came up with this acronym that helped us remember. I'm a big acronym guy because it takes things that are outside of words to help you remember a great deal of things. So my thought was, what is the fruit that you will reap if you follow a championship process? And the acronym was Get a Pair. And that is growth mindset. And a growth mindset is a mindset that you can learn to do anything. You might not be great at it now, but through implementation and discipline and work, you can make change. The E stands for embracing the challenge. And at the end of the day, our life is full of challenges, but you have to be able to get up for them because they're not going to stop coming. The T stands for take action. Now, here's where I call the T is where we separate the armchair quarterbacks from Peyton Manning. When there's a lot of people that say, oh, yeah, I'm willing to learn and I'm willing to accept the difficulties, but I'm not willing to get off the couch to do it. It's the people that take action. It's better to take action in the wrong way and just change your course than to have never taken action at all. Then the A is accountability. We have to be accountable for our ways and how we go about it because if we can't hold others accountable if we can't hold ourselves accountable. So that's like the base of the tree that grows the fruit because the pear part is our preparation, whatever it is that our endeavor is. The level of preparation that you put forth to be the greatest that you can be is ultimately the first guiding force to where we're going. The E stands for execution. When we're trying to execute our game plan, the level of precision that we go about it oftentimes mirrored how hard and how proper we prepared. But there's one thing to prepare, and then there's another thing to do it in action. And that's important. But if there's anything that is really stands out in my acronym is the second A, and that is adaptability. Because at the end of the day, when we're trying to be great, we're trying to win in life, the forces that we're trying to take down aren't wanting to lose either. So when we face our challenges, not everything's going to go as planned. All that preparation, we're going to have to be able to adapt and be malleable to the situation because we don't know what the opposing force is going to give us. So to be able to be adaptable also shows a sign of how prepared you were. How many different iterations of success did you visualize before you could become successful? And then the final R is that relentless resiliency to be able to never back off because life isn't going to back off on you. And the only counterbalance is to never give up on it. And to me, if you follow that process, you will receive the fruit of the process, which is ultimately you getting better every day. But my closing line is always this: if we don't have the courage to get a pair soon, there may be no fruit to reap at all. And many people are not taking action. People aren't willing to do the work for themselves. They're waiting for somebody else to do it and then parrot it from the side. Our country and largely everybody could be benefited by taking more action and following a championship process.
But that makes me think, what do you think are some of the biggest reasons why people don't take action and are not adaptable? I mean, some people might say, well, you're just lazy, but are there other reasons, or might there be other, factors that come into play that keep people from taking that step to be able to take action?
Yeah, I've found that obviously fear of a lot of things, right? So some people are afraid to win. Some people are afraid to win. Some people are afraid to lose.
That reminds me, before I started my business, I'd worked for a very long time, many years, and I was in a position working in Nashville, and pretty high up, and I was thinking, I think I want to start my own business. But every time I would think about it, Virgil, my stomach would be in knots. I would be like, oh, and I was like, I don't know, I just get this really weird feeling. And so actually a friend called, and I picked up the phone and they were like, what's going on? And I said, I've been thinking about starting my own business. And we had a little conversation about it. And he was like, well, why don't you just do it? And I said, I don't know. I'm a little afraid. I was like, every time I think about it, my stomach gets tied up in knots, because, you get used to a paycheck. That's a big thing. You want that steady income and you rely on that. But he said, really, let's think about it. What are you so afraid of? And I really had to pause and I thought about it. What is it that is really, really getting to me? And I said, well, I think, it's like I said, the paycheck, a couple of things. And then he stopped and he said, fear is just false evidence appearing as real. I thought about that and I said, wow, sometimes, it's like the dark shadow in the room. Sometimes you just have to move it aside and do what you need to do because, so many things can grip us and make us think we shouldn't move forward with something. But, here we are, 23 years later. So, I decided not to let fear get the best of me and, move forward with it. So I think that is important, that you have to get over those fears and, like you said, take action.
Largely our imagination creates the biggest obstacle, because the part of the brain that keeps us safe, the prefrontal cortex, is heavily concerned about keeping you safe physically, mentally, and emotionally. So the fear of failing, the fear of humiliation, of going out on your own and believing that you could do it and it not happening, creates this, the brain just wants to protect you from that terrible feeling. But in all actuality, I look back over the 10 of the worst things that have ever happened to me, and I still feel like I've made it infinitely worse just because my imagination running ahead, trying to clear the path, just being present,
Absolutely.
made a big difference.
One of the things that guy asked me, he's like, really think about it. What's the worst thing that can happen? And I was like, well, yeah, I guess if I do it and it's not successful, I just have to go get another job. And he's like, exactly. And he's like, and how long have you worked? I said, since I was 9. I said, I've never not worked. So he was like, well, that should kind of tell you something. So I think we have to kind of get over those things. But you also, I think, the flip side of that is you do have to be realistic and you do have to get your education or if training skills, you can't just go out and play golf and never had a lesson. You might, but you might not do too well if you don't know the rules of the game and how it's played and all that. So that's an important component as well, learning what something is all about. You can't just dive in with no experience. I jumped out on that limb after 18 years, of doing what I was doing. So, I mean, hard to believe, but did end up, deciding, hey, this is the right move for me at the right time. I wanted to ask you also, Virgil, what advice would you give to someone who may be stuck in a rut or a negative vicious cycle that they keep repeating?
Well, that's a great question, because mental illness is a very interesting piece. Like, there are some people that have a chemical imbalance or have had a trauma that is so intense that you can't fathom the pain that that person's through. So for me to judge every single person without knowing what's happening is really challenging. But I always say, like, there's two kinds of depression. There's that chemical imbalance property that needs medical help. And then there's like this other depression that's a situational based attitude that has, your body is using something that it did in childhood to protect itself when you were age 7 that is no longer serving you well at age 35. And it's a childhood trauma that's interfering with your ability to think correctly. So the first thing I will be encouraging people to do is, if you feel like you can't do anything without a negative spin, then double negative it. Like, I always, like, one of my favorite stories of coaching golf was, I had this player who played at Vanderbilt who was a very, very good player. And I called him the Dump King, because all he'd think was, Don't hit it in the water. Don't miss the green left. Don't miss this putt. And I said, you know, Ned, why don't you think about it like this? Instead of saying, don't hit it in the water off the tee, he said, don't hit it right down the middle. Because the brain doesn't understand the word don't. So if you don't with a fear, all you're doing is bringing the fear. But if you reverse it and you go, just don't hit it down the middle of the fairway, just don't make this putt, and put the positive on it, it's amazing what happens to the brain when all you're doing is actually telling yourself what you want, because it doesn't understand the word don't. So to me, being able to find a new way. So what's going to happen if you do that? If you're a don't queen or king, and you double negative it to exactly to a positive, the first thing you're going to notice is how silly you sound. That's going to bring a little bit of laughter, which ultimately gives us a different chemical in the brain. All of a sudden, we realize how silly we've been with our negative talk. And the more we talk in a glowing way with the word don't in it, we actually smile while going through it because we know what we're actually doing to ourselves. We're talking positive and with a double negative. And that way, it changes people's mindset because they're like, if that can work, if you can double negative, just don't go to work 10 minutes early today. Just don't do those 10 extra push-ups. Just don't do X. Don't, but have it be something that you're positively trying to do. It's amazing. You can't help but realize how powerful your words are. And then as soon as you realize that you've double negative, you can just actually change it to positive because you've learned your lesson. You've learned your lesson that your self-talk affects your self-image, and your self-image is truly the mathematical equation of your potential minus how much you're interfering with your potential. That is your self-image, and you will never outperform your self-image. So if you need your self-image to rise, you need to take away interference. And interference is largely fear, imagined fear, and imagined outcomes, and lack of preparation. If you take care of those things right there, you're off to a great start.
Yeah, isn't that amazing how much the mind can really play tricks on you, and you have to really speak life into yourself. You gotta, like you just said, your words have power, and so many people don't realize that. I hear people talking. You ever, meet the Debbie Downers, of the world? They're always speaking negative. I remember working with someone at one point. I won't call any names, but they used to always say, "The grass is brown all the way around." Like they never saw anything positive in life, and that is not good. It's not healthy. I think we do have to really speak positive and look at ways in which we can, encourage ourselves. A lot of people look for, I guess, their accolades and their I don't know when people are looking for, other people to kind of feed into them. They don't often feed into themselves, and you have to do that. I think you really have to speak, positive and speak that life into yourself and the things that you're, seeking to achieve, because, it's so much negative going on in the world. We have to start doing things that are encouraging to ourselves. And like you said, the preparation certainly is key. I wanted to ask you though, with all of that, how much do you have to, I guess, hype yourself up? And what is maybe one of the most difficult situations you've ever had to go through, and how did you get through it?
Well, I've had some doozies in my lifetime. Probably the one that was the most shocking to me was the floods of 2010 in Nashville. We got, I mean, a little, I know these numbers because I had to sell my house after it got flooded. 1.2 billion gallons of water fell on Nashville in 40 hours. And on Saturday, I had 8 feet of water in my home. And on Sunday, where I taught golf, was basically wiped off the planet. So now I have a flooded home with hundreds of thousands of dollars in damage and no job. I was, and I didn't do anything wrong to lose it. It was Mother Nature,
Right.
right? All I knew is I had to find a place where I could teach golf. And I had this feeling. Nashville is an amazing community, and when there's difficult times in our community, everybody rallies around. It's an incredible city, and I'm
It
not saying
really
there's
is.
incredible cities all over the world. I get that, but in
Right.
Nashville, this is a pretty remarkable city. And
Volunteer state, right? That's
yeah,
what they call it, the volunteers, because people are serious about that.
and I was very fortunate. And to me, what I learned there is it can't get much worse than that. I didn't do anything wrong. I lost my house. I lost my job due to a natural disaster. And I chose to wake up every day. I'm going to figure out where I'm going to teach golf and I'm going to make it. And I had all the community around me trying to help put everybody back together again. From all over the country, people were here.
Yeah, I
That let
remember
me.
it well. I remember taking my kids. You know, they do in high school and stuff now, they do so many community service hours. And I took a group of the high school students over to a neighborhood in Old Hickory. And I remember going in there, and I mean, there was so much water. People were in boats, and it was up, oh, kind of up to where the houses and the doors, and flooded over half the houses. And I remember going in there and tearing out drywall and digging up the tiles. I mean, it was horrendous. Like, it was just like you couldn't believe it was like a whole neighborhood, and that was just one neighborhood. And I mean, it can feel really overwhelming to be in there trying to help in such a horrible circumstance. And they were, I don't know if you know where I'm talking about, but right across the street they have that golf course. And I mean, that whole golf course was flooded. It looked like a lake. Do you remember that?
Yep,
Yeah,
absolutely. I
that
mean,
was
the
something.
Cumberland, it was right there by the Cumberland River, right? So it took over Hermitage Golf Course, Gaylord, anything that's along the river. It beat up pretty bad. And it was just one of those things now where when I look back on it, like one of the first things that people were telling me is if this isn't going to affect you in 5 years, you shouldn't let it really bother you too much. I'm like, well, this one could. He goes, you're right. That's nice. Why you have to pay attention now. You gotta go back to your foundations. You gotta do the right things. You can't be worried about, what car you drive. You can't be worried about where you're eating. You gotta make sure you got a car to drive. You gotta make sure you got food for your family. You gotta make sure you're doing the fundamentals of life and get back from, because you've been wiped out. So you gotta build it from the ground up. So, and that's all I did. And now I know, because I can't really imagine without, somebody passing away, a more jacked up scenario for somebody to have lost all of that and they didn't do anything wrong to do it. To know that I came out on the other side with a lot of people's help to get there. Now, when you go through something like that, it steals your resolve to know that you can get through anything if you can handle it right here. You got to be able to handle it in your mind.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, my mom used to always say, "Hey, just keep living. Wake up another day, because each day can get better." And so, as long as we have breath in our lungs and can rise, there's hope, and there are things that we can do to, get beyond all of that. Those are just simple material things. But when it comes to, actually what this life is all about and more, it's about much more than that. So, and then to see people come together in that sense, and everybody getting together and helping other people. That was kind of the beauty of that, just kind of looking around, and to even be able to instill in younger generations how important it is, because you never know when that shoe might be on the other foot, for you to always think about other people and helping others. That is very, very simple. As we talk about that and some of the positives in life, I also wanted to take a moment to talk a little bit about the state of the world. And obviously, with not only the floods, but we've been through a lot over the last couple of years. Following that, we've had COVID, And certainly one of the most trying times in America in terms of division since the civil rights movement. So what are some ways that you've employed to actually bring people together?
Well, I really think there are a couple of really important factors here. One is that no matter what your race, what your religion, what your preferences are in life, politically or what have you, generally speaking, everybody is looking for the same thing. They're looking for peace. They're looking for family. They're looking to be important to somebody and have somebody important to them. And they're all looking to be as happy as they can be. And happiness has a unique view because ultimately we need struggle in our life to conquer to gain that happiness of moving through life. I think what ends up happening is that our country has gotten less educated about things, and where they're quick, because now with information so readily available, people are no longer willing to investigate. They'll take somebody else's words and buy into it as principle and then defend that blindly, not having any idea what it is that they're defending. They just don't want to do the work, but they're not afraid to follow along, kind of like a sheep, right? And then to me, nobody's willing, I shouldn't say nobody, not many people are willing to do the work to inform themselves. So if you feel like there's a problem in this, wherever you're at, you should inform yourself of which really is the problem. And then do your part. Accountability, right? You can't expect others to be accountable for themselves if you're not accountable for yourself. So it starts with the man in the mirror. And to me, I've really tried to handle our biggest fears, our biggest concerns, whether it be religion, whether it be race, whether it be sexual preference. Those three things are probably the most polarizing factors in our country. In the world, really. But if we sat down and really thought about what that is, it's a little disheartening. So, like to me, and I did a lot of research, and I got a book here right in front of me from this. It's a book called The Sports Gene by David Epstein. He's a Sports Illustrated writer, and it's a book about basically genetic greatness. And the first one I'll talk about is, essentially religion. Every religion essentially is saying the same thing. And all I want is if you follow this God or that God, it doesn't matter to me which one you do. If you're going to walk the walk, you got to talk the talk. But if you can't do it, you're not representing your God. I have a big problem with that. And to me, like Jordan Peterson says so many great things, but he's just like, one of the Ten Commandments is don't use God's name in vain. And for the longest time, I literally thought that meant don't say swear words that have God's name in it. But that's really not what that means. What it really means is do not use divine intentions for your own self-good. Don't pretend to be doing something godly
Wow, that's
for
good.
your own benefit. And so many people, like, that's where religion has gotten jacked up from every side. It doesn't make a difference which one you're talking about. That's a problem. The second one that really wrecked me was the color of somebody's skin. Now, I'll never forget this as long as I live. In the book, The Sports Gene, it says, do you realize why white people are super white in Denmark and why black people are super dark in the Central Africa? It's because the body's natural defense against sunlight is pigmentation. If you took somebody who lived in Denmark and moved them to the equator, in 7 generations, they would be black. If you took somebody from Central Africa and you moved them to Denmark, in 7 generations, they would be white. And that literally blew my brain. Nobody is different. It's just where is your heritage originated from as to why your pigment of your skin is either light or dark. And through 7 generations of change, You could be completely different. And
Yeah.
then let's talk about, there's a very famous female basketball player who has largely male hormones. And when people are truly messed up in this world, they've scientifically proven at about the 9 week mark in the woman's pregnancy, very rarely, but it can happen, it has happened, there is the female body is in the woman, but the body recognizes it as a male and gives it the testosterone. So in 1972, the woman who won the longest run, I can't remember, it may have been the marathon, but I think it was maybe just the mile in the Olympics in 72, she was stripped of her gold medal because she had abnormal amounts of testosterone in her blood. 45 years later, they gave her gold medal back because they found out through the genetic testing that when she was in the womb, she was a female but received male hormones from the mother. Nobody's at fault. So generally speaking, the people who are get basically ridiculed for being gay, it's not their fault. People that dislike somebody else because of the color of their skin, but because they're different, they're only different because of where they are positioned to the sun and the equator. And religion is largely fundamentally the same no matter what, but it's the people who choose to use the word faking divine inspiration for self-benefit. Those three things largely are pulling this world apart. And it's lack of education from all sides that are creating the problem. And it drives me insane. And that's what shifted me from trying to just be known as this guy who coaches golf to try to make a bigger impact with the things that I've learned. Because as soon as I tell that story, like 95% of the people can't even believe that it's true. And then I got to pull the book out because I've highlighted it because it made such an impact on my life. And like, here it is. And they're like, wow. And it changes. I've changed hundreds of people's lives through perspective while giving a golf lesson. And that's what led me to believe that I could use this golf to coach the lessons of life. And what I've learned in my lifetime is that one of the greatest gifts that we have as a child is playing games, being outside and playing. You get a chance to learn life's hard lessons while playing a game, while it doesn't really matter yet. That you can learn how to lose, you can learn how to fight, you can learn how to give your very best and not win. You can learn how to not have your best stuff and still win. And all of those things occur while having fun. And then when you're 27 years old and you get your first smack to the head with bad breaks, you can look back over hundreds of games that you've played that didn't quite go your way that came out the other side. And to me, if we're going to have a reboot, one of the greatest things that anybody can learn how to do is learn the difficulties of life through a game, through something they have a passion for. And when they do that, almost everybody's great lessons that I've spoken to are lessons that they learned in JV football, you know, fifth and sixth grade basketball, field hockey, golf, whatever. I listen to people talk all the time about the lessons that they learned to persevere through difficulties, and it's always on the field of play.
Yeah, and that's
We're
so
not, we're
true.
struggling with that. So I'm trying to use my sport to be able to coach you to be a better golfer and a better human at the same time. And it's been an unbelievably fun journey for me.
Yeah, that is so cool. You know, how that educational experience can really bring people together by them having a better understanding of each other. So that education key is so important, because you think there are people who have come from nothing and, you know, built themselves up and pulled themselves up by their bootstrap. I know I used to do like charity golf tournament, actually, with Shoney's Incorporated, with their bootstrap program that they did for many years, giving, you know, scholarships to 54 students across the state of Tennessee. And each of those stories, oh my gosh, I got to meet all these students, the things that they had gone through just make your skin crawl. Like, a 16-year-old raising three siblings, with no parents, parents on drugs or what have you. So some horrendous circumstances, but it just shows you when someone is determined to do well, to succeed, that it can be done. But the problem is that I think a lot of times people are looking for someone else to give them a handout. I'm not saying you don't need a helping hand sometimes, but you've got to decide for yourself. I think a lot of times, what is it that you want for your life for you to be able to, be successful and achieve why you're here. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation with golf pro Virgil Herring. We'll be back right after this. A lot of things have come to a screeching halt due to COVID-19, but you should know that the court system in Tennessee is still open and holding in-person hearings for orders of protection and other types of abuse cases. If you have a hearing date, double-check on where your hearing will be held. If you need assistance on an order of protection or temporary restraining order, contact the Legal Aid Society at 1-800-238-1443 or visit our website at www.las.org. And welcome back. I am Dr. Celeste Stein. I'm here talking with Virgil Herring, golf pro. And Virgil, it's been a great conversation. I want to also ask you about, as you're teaching different people how to play golf, how would you evaluate, from your perspective, the differences between your PGA Tour winners and those who might not quite be winning at the game of golf? What actually distinguishes the two?
Well, there's elite talent, right? There's this bizarre, almost indescribable hand-eye coordination that allows, golf is a precision sport
Right.
with a lot of power in it, right? So it's the people who can move the fastest, the most precise. So at the end of the day, not everybody is going to be great at golf, but everybody can be functional at golf. I have
Yes.
That to me, 99% of the people who play the game just want to have fun and feel like they're playing the game that they watch on TV. And then there's that 1%, 2% max who want to see if they can take it to the professional level. At the end of the day, there's certainly a God-given physical talent that goes with that. But then with much talent given, there is a lot asked. And those people who have the talent but have the effort and work ethic to hone their craft to a point where you move from, I hope I can play this game professionally, to I believe I can play this game professionally, till I know I'm going to play this game professionally. That basically means you move from, I want to learn how to do it, to I've learned it till I can do it right. Until you've learned it, until you can't do it wrong. And ultimately, people's success goes along with between their ability and their threshold of pain while working on mundane fundamentals, which is exactly what happens in any part of life. The mundane fundamentals, are you willing to do them until you can't do it wrong? Not until you can only do it right. And in my opinion, the difference between true greatness and the people that you always wonder why never made it is that the people that never made it did it until they could do it right. And when everything was going right, it worked out. But as soon as they faced adversity, they didn't rise to the level of their talent. They fell to the level of their training, and they didn't do it enough. So that when they were put under the maximum amount of heat, whether it's on the field of play, in the office, in the classroom, in the boardroom, wherever, if they did it until they can't do it wrong, they became elite. And almost every person that does that no longer is chasing somebody else. They're chasing yesterday's them to try to be 1% better than they were today.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I spent several years teaching, as well as like adjunct assistant associate professor over the years. And you meet I taught a lot of students broadcast journalism, and one of the things you observe is a lot of success to me is how much that person's willing to go back and actually practice and have things down so much that even if you make a mistake, you're still able to keep going, and get through everything. But some people just don't want to put in the work. It's like I think Kevin Hart always would say, everybody wants to be successful and a star, but nobody wants to do the work. And that's, I mean, to me, that's a big part of it, making sure that one actually takes the time to learn what they need to learn, and then what do they say? Practice makes perfect. But how many people don't achieve where they're trying to get to because they don't practice? I mean, I do believe that some of it is God-given talent. There are certain things that people can do that you look and I mean, as far as like, memorizing a book. My son has this crazy thing that both of us have done over the years. It's like where he can watch a TV show kind of and spat it back, like doing different voices and accents and everything. I don't know where that came from, but both of us kind of have been able to do that. I used to like I was on a forensics team. I would memorize books, and then I would, spat the book back, and basically be able to, tell that story using the different voices and what have you. But that to me is what you would call a gift. Because I mean, I just don't think a lot of people are able to do that. They probably, I guess, maybe could. I don't know. But then someone who is just practicing something over and over and over again, some of it, has to do with your voice, the tone, learning how to speak, and all that. But it's really interesting to see those differences. I mean, you hear about stories like about people like Michael Jordan, who really didn't play till he got to high school. I mean, but that was in him. And some of it's practice. But they say, you kind of have to start early to do some of those things. But I think, if you have it in you, you have it in you. But not to say if you don't, you can't learn. So I
Yeah,
think,
if you follow a process to greatness, that's one of my favorite lines from Dr. Bob Rutella. If you follow a championship process, I promise you, you'll be a champion. What I can't promise you is when. And the when is what gets people. When they don't get the success that they want in a time frame that they want, they quit. It's not meant for me. But therein lies the David Goggins in me. You have to keep pushing. There's no such thing as failure unless you quit. And
Yep,
at the end
that's
of
a
the
big
day,
thing. Exactly right.
and transitioning isn't quitting, but quitting is quitting. But if you say, I don't want to just be a golf teacher anymore, I want to impact people's lives, that doesn't mean that I'm not trying to still be a good golf teacher, but I'm transitioning in a different road to use the game to help people in a broader way than just how far they hit their driver or how great they hit their irons or how good they putt under pressure. But what I can tell you is that the process that it took to become great at golf will be the process that you can use to be great at whatever you want to do.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. I know you do spend time, as an entrepreneur, and you do help others in achieving their goals. How do you go about that, using that process to help others?
Well, quickly, I'm going to try to find out what is it that's not golf that's got you messed up? Is
Hmm.
it the foundation phase, which is the GETA part of my get a pair? Is your mindset not right? Do you feel like it's fixed? I'm never going to be this. I can't do this. It's preordained. Well, that's a fixed mindset. So that's got to change. Are you afraid of the problem? Are you afraid of failing? If you can't embrace what you got coming at you, you're going to run from it. You can't run from life. And some things that we have to face is like facing Mike Tyson in 1986. It's a big bully, but we have to walk into it. But talk is cheap, right? Can you take action, and are you accountable? Is that where the problem area is? Because a lot of people, it's not the fruit part that's hard. It's the foundation part that's hard. It's like they don't, deep down inside, they don't believe they can do it. They're afraid of what's going to happen. They don't want to take action because what if I fail? And all of those three things lead us to I don't have any accountability. If we have the get up part, and you're like, okay, I'm not afraid. Now all I have to do is what is this issue? And I got to prepare for it. And not prepare just to the first effort, like your first wave of success. You got to bet that whatever it is you're facing is going to have a counterattack. And you got to be prepared for that. And you got to know that they're going to be prepared for your next move. So it's like, how many moves are you prepared for? How many iterations of success? How much adaptability do you have ready for yourself to win? And winning is winning in life. Right? So if you're working at Google, you know that you're also taking on Apple and Microsoft, and you're talking about the big titans in the world. So you can't fall asleep. You can't expect yesterday's home runs to win today's baseball games. But you also can't expect yesterday's strikeouts to lose today's baseball games. You got to stay present. So being able to stay present, stay prepared, and constantly go to battle with more weapons than you've ever had. What's that mean? You're so prepared that you have 9, 10, 15 ways that you can be successful, not one. And I think most people put together a very good phase one, but as soon as they get punched in the face, they don't know how to respond. They haven't prepared for the counterattacks that are going to keep coming. And that's where the perseverance piece is. You got to be able to outlast them.
Exactly. I've often heard that about certain people like Beyonce. They say no one will ever outwork Beyonce. That she spends a lot, like 20 hours in rehearsal, just practice, practice, practice. And so that's how you become, I think, the best at what you do, and where no one else can touch you because you've put in the work. And some people want to get there, but they don't want to put in that little piece of it, the work. And it's so funny. I can think of some very, very talented people that I've worked with before. And that little piece about the fact that some of them, it's like they're, you can just tell they're like on the precipice of a real success. And then all of a sudden they just kind of almost give up right when they're right on the verge of that success. I don't really know psychologically what that's about. That maybe it's the fear of failure or what have you, as you spoke about just a moment ago, but I think, man, you just want to kind of give them that little extra push to say, just keep going. Do not stop, because you never know when you're going to actually get where you're trying to go. So, and that's the thing. And it's so great that, you're probably very much by being around so many people and kind of studying them and their mindsets, able to give them that boost that they need to kind of pick up on those things and help them get where they're trying to go. I know I was working with a guy, well, who was like an exercise physiologist, and I work with a lot of trainers and stuff, but none of them could really kind of help me with getting where I was trying to go. But he had that one little extra piece, and we would talk about a lot of things, but he would also help me like with diet, not just exercise, but like saying, hey, why don't you try, eating, add a little kale or add a little spinach to this, just all those little fine tweaks, to kind of help me get where I was trying to go. So I think, it's also finding the right people in your life. This is so important. As I'm looking at you, I'm thinking, having those right people who speak the right things into your life and can really listen and give you proper advice. Because sometimes people go here, there, and everywhere looking for someone to tell them what they should be doing, and that person doesn't even have their own life together. It's like, how are they going to tell you what to do? So you have to really be careful about who you surround yourself with. If you're trying to be the best this or that, you can't be around people who aren't trying to be the best this or that, because they'll pull you down. So you have to, I mean, it's nothing against people, but you have to realize if you have a special gift or some place you're trying to get or something you're trying to do that not a lot of people are doing, you better find other like-minded people and try to, get with them that can help you more quickly, get to where you're trying to go.
Yeah,
I wanted to.
we largely become the summation of the five people we spend the most amount of time with in our life. So choose wisely.
Absolutely, and you have to remember that because when someone is close around you, it is very easy for them to influence you negatively or positively. So
Yeah,
that's just
when people
one.
are struggling, they're easy to be manipulated because any little bit of hope, even if it's false hope, can pull people in the wrong direction. And of all the things that we should be concerned about, is that there aren't enough people out there offering help to people that can't seem to catch a break and give them hope to shine on. And there's also people that when they do get those opportunities, they're so closed-minded and so jaded from past experiences that they don't even recognize that the door is being opened for them. And
That is such a good point. Oh my goodness, because if all your life, you've been beaten down and you just it's never anything good or positive, yeah, that door can actually be being open and you miss it. So that's why it's important again to be around right and like-minded people who can help you along with that. So very, very excellent point. I wanted to quickly, I know we don't have a whole lot of time left, but I do want to get a little bit of information in about the books Elevated and Excavated. Tell me about these books, who you wrote them, for, why did you write them, and what they're all about.
So I wrote Elevated and Excavated with former Vanderbilt All-American, great basketball player, and great basketball coach Drew Maddox. He's a great friend of mine, and I met him at a Christmas party 5 years ago. And as I sat down, I was late to the party, and there was only one seat left, and it was right beside this real tall guy. So I sat down, and I'm like, "Hey, I'm Virgil Herring." He goes, "Hey, I'm Drew Maddox." And I'm like, "You mean like 3-point shooting Drew Maddox?" He's like, "Yeah, that's me." And I said, "I booed you off the court in 95. And literally, I spent all this time." And he said, "I've always wanted to write a book. What was that like?" And I'm like, "Well, I'll write a book with you." He goes, "Why would you write a book with me?" And I'm like, "Well, I've already written one by myself, and it's pretty boring. So I'd love to be able to do something with you, collaborate." So the first book is Elevated. We pick 50 words that are inspiring, trying to elevate people. And we told a story about the word from either the player's perspective, because he was a great basketball player, I'm a great golfer. From the coach's perspective, he's a great coach, I'm a coach. And then, or from a spectator's perspective, something that we've all watched, and what can we glean from a memory to cling to in moments of difficulty? And it's kind of meant to be a daily ritual in which you can read something, just one word a day, and it can give you something for the rest of your life. In both of our books, it has Drew's definition of the word, my definition of the word, and then a blank page for you to write your definition of the word so that my books become your book. All of the books that I've written are designed for you to have an intangible place in it so that it becomes your book, not my book.
I love that. What a great
So
concept. I haven't really heard of many like that, where that really, is sounds very interactive and makes you really think about, well, how do I feel about this? And that's so important for self-reflection and, growth, if you will.
Excavated was written coming out of the pandemic. And so if Elevated was one thing, being excavated means we dug you out of the dirt. And I'm here to tell you, there were many people that needed to be dug out of the dirt after COVID and all of the, well, now we know all the lies that occurred that shut down businesses unnecessarily and really just crushed a large percentage of the population's income. And to me, we found 50 bigger words that made you think more, that made you give more because people needed help. Not only did you need it, but one of the greatest ways to pull yourself out of difficult times is to help others out of difficult times. And
Absolutely.
so
Absolutely.
once again, the book was written out of the perspective of the player, the coach, or the spectator. And the second book was very powerful to both Drew and I because we hit on so many very heavy topics and we shed light on people who came through much worse than what COVID was and personal stories that everybody knows about that they forget when things are going tough, that lets you know that if they could do it in that situation, I'm sure that you can do it too. And it just provides hope. I mean, there's so many people that just need a tablespoon of hope every day because there's a lot of people who errantly believe there is no hope.
Yeah, that is so important. And on that note, we're about out of time. I just want to say that is a great note to end on. Hope. There is always hope. And I thank you so much for joining us today, Virgil. It's Virgil Herring. You can, I'm sure, find his books on all the popular platforms. You definitely have an amazing mission on this earth, and I am so excited to have had the opportunity to have you here today and to work with you. Virgil is part of our Speakers Bureau with Bishop Stein and Associates Public Relations Incorporated. And you can certainly find out more about him and how to book him as in his work as a golf pro for lessons, etc. You can go to BSAPRInc.com to book him to speak or coach at your next corporate event. That's all the time we have for now. Thanks for tuning in and be sure to tune in again for our next episode. And be sure to like, share, and subscribe to our channels on bbsradio.com and YouTube. I'm your host, Dr. Celeste Stein. Please go out there and make it a great day.